and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil, Inc.
And I'm his friend Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave! Let's talk about 2019.
2019, my friend, we've got a special treat for everybody in today's show. These are all of our favorite best ofs for 2019, Brad,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, these are some of the greatest moments, some of the moments where we really cut loose and had some fun with the topic of comics and cartooning. And listen, there's a lot of shows out there that talk about creativity and talk about web comics specifically, but I think some of the best moments are when we are completely not taking each other seriously.
Yeah. So, to answer your unspoken question, listener at home, is this show going to be helpful for you in your art making? Absolutely not.
Nope.
Is this show going to be good for your heart? Yes, absolutely.
Yes, guaranteed.
So, we want to say thank you for listening. Also, thanks, in a big shout-out way to our sponsor for the end of 2019, Wacom over at WACOM.com, yes. The fine makers of Cintiqs and Intuos. We have been so grateful and happy with their sponsorship of the podcast. Brad and I, as you know, are legit big-time users of both of our Cintiqs for the better part of a decade now. So
yeah.
It has been delightful to have them as a sponsor for 2019, and as is always the case, we recommend them personally because we literally use them and bought them with our own money and have multiple units of them around the studio. So we thank Wacom for being our big sponsor for this year. And I think without further ado, Brad, anything else you want to set up the old clip show with?
No, other than just to repeat, thank you so much to our Patreon backers. You folks make this show happen. We couldn't be more happy, especially just after the special offer. There's a bunch of you all joining us for the first time. And thank you so much. And let's hit that magic button and hear what the best moments of 2019 were.
And away we go.
Couldn't you imagine that, though? Wouldn't that be a great audiobook? Okay, panel one, Calvin's coming in from the left. He's got a stripy shirt on, but Hobbs is waiting behind the kitchen counter. Panel two.
I like that you made it like a creepy old guy. He's waiting behind the counter. All right. Oh, we're going to see some stuff now. All right, here comes his dad. He's been biking outside, and he's kind of sweaty. He's holding the bike over his shoulder. He's got some kind of ball in his hand. Oh, shit, what's Calvin going to do with this? Oh, we're going to see some stuff here. Pazoo, the lion, or is it a tiger? Hey, Margaret, is this a lion or a tiger in this thing? It's a tiger. All right, the tiger comes at the little boy with the spiky hair. How come nobody ain't combing that boy's hair? He looks like he just crawled out of a tunnel. Anyway, the lion-tiger thing, he hits the little boy. Pazoo! The little kid goes flying ass akimbo. Oh, my God, I wish you could see this drawing.
Akimbo!
Oh, his ass is akimbo all over the backyard. And there's stars and there's curly cues and there's little dots. This cartoonist really went to town. Oh boy, that kid. And look at his shoes fell off in the next panel. That lion tiger thing, kazoom! He hit him so hard the shoes fell off. Oh, bada zing, bada zoom. That kid's not gonna mess with that tiger again. Oh God.
Oh my God. That was absolutely, you're getting a standing ovation over here. That was marvelous.
Thank you.
Now I want there to be a Calvin and Hobbes audiobook.
Oh, and the mom, she's got her head buried in her hands in the background. She's like, what the hell did I marry into? I get it, Margaret. I'm assuming that's her name. It's Margaret, right? Do they name the broad in this comic strip? Do they ever give her a name? No? All right. Oh, boy, the typical patriarchy. They don't even give her a name. They just got to write about her in the background. All right. Well, listen, I'm trying to be woke over here, and then they don't even give her a name. Oh, God,
anyway,
I don't know.
Page two.
All right, turn to page two. Oh, it looks like Calvin's eating a tuna fish sandwich. He don't like it. He wants to give it to the tiger kid. Oh, my God, wait a minute. Here's a wrinkle that I didn't see. Margaret, the tiger ain't real. The tiger's just a toy, and the boy has imagined it. Holy shit, what a wrinkle. Got a zing, got a zoom. I didn't see that coming.
Oh.
Oh my God, I am so on board for the for the Dave Kellett narrated audiobook of Calvin and Hobbes.
Can you imagine if I emailed Bill? Hey, Bill, I got a fun. I'm including an audio file with this email. I just wanted to get your thoughts. Do you think it would be okay if I did a vaguely Bronx Italian guy from 1985 reading your comic?
It would be our version of Garfield minus Garfield. It would be the audio Calvin and Hobbes.
I'm going to say, without even emailing him, there's no way he's going to say no to this. I think he's going to be super on board.
Oh, how could he say no?
Yeah, Dave, I love this idea. Big green light. I'll email Anders McMeel right now, and we'll get that audiobook going. Boy, Dave Kellett, we were just talking about how you've made a career of it, combining great writing and so-so art to really make a go of it. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, that's actually two insults, really, because the so-so art is an insult. But then it's not like to become successful, to become someone who's doing this for a living. No, it's making a go of it. That's making a go of it is a long ways away from success.
Yeah, it's akin to be like, Brad, look at that three-legged dog. It can still run. Look at that thing go.
He's not running, but he certainly is making a go of it. There's two things. There's going and there's making a go. And you, my friend, are making a go as far as this guy is concerned.
God. You know, you and I are pretty gregarious and outgoing and conversationalist when we need to be. But
yes,
there is kind of an unspoken thing among all cartoonists that have ever exhibited at a Comic-Con that you get some folks that just by nature of their life, they don't do a lot of talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they don't.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily that they're in any way bad people. It's just some people are either shy or tend to be homebodies, but Comic-Con brings them out because they've been reading all year and by God, they're going to come out for Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, sometimes you get those people where they're like, they're so excited to see you and or they don't do a lot of talking. So the compliment comes out like, Brad Geiger, you're super ugly. And you're like, wait, what? What? Why is that? Why would you say that to me?
Yeah. Or you get the feeling that he was trying to be nice, but he just didn't have a lot of experience doing that. So it's like, yeah, Brad, you're actually not a half bad looking guy once you get past the nose.
Here is the thing that I wanted to bring up to you, because for some reason in Christmas shopping, this concept came up and I wanted to just run it by you because it speaks to how lazy Americans can be. Do you guys remember at the turn of the century when they would have health centers and sanitariums and they had that exercise, quote unquote, machine that was basically a belt around your middle that would wiggle your belly?
Yes.
Do you remember this thing? Yep.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah.
Why did we ever think that that would work? Where it's like, you don't have to do a damn thing, but this machine is going to wiggle your belly.
Because we're just going to jiggle you to fitness.
Yeah, because it was like the illusion of exercise.
Well, things are moving. I must be exercising.
Yeah, exactly.
It literally was just like, hey, have you been jiggled today? Did you get your jiggling in? Did you go get your... The doctor says you got to jiggle for 20 minutes. Like, what was that?
But listen, you can't blame him. I mean, what if it would have worked?
If it would have worked, I would have one in my living room right now.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta give them credit. Listen, if it was the turn of the century and it was you and me, Dave, we'd be jiggling during the podcast.
Just like a low, like the entire time.
Yeah, all the way through the show.
Can I tell you though, I have to say that I appreciate you both because it did not even occur to me to think of the joke construction like, what if it worked? That's an amazing way to think about it.
But we've all had that thought.
If it had worked, our world would be so different if that thing had worked.
Oh, yes.
Like no gym would exist anywhere. There would never be like a 24-hour fitness or an LA fitness or any of that bullshit.
Oh, okay, let's take it one step further. Can you imagine the Apple version of the jiggle machine?
It's super clean. It's all white. It's super clean. Yeah. It can hook onto any door frame, so you could take it with you.
Right.
And you know, okay, let's imagine this world where the jiggler worked. Like you'd have your you would have your home base jiggler, but then when you would check into a hotel, you'd be like, and do you have an available jiggler here at the hotel?
I By distinctly the way, ordered a room with a jiggler. I got the message Monday, what was wrong with it. And this was just so perfect. The guy gets me on the phone. He says, oh yeah. He says, we figured out what was wrong. It was a dirtle throttle body. And I go, what? He goes, it was a dirty throttle body. And I realized, Dave,
throttle? Wait, say that slowly. A dirty throttle body.
A dirty throttle body. And I realized he could tell me anything. He could say, oh yeah, we looked under the hood there. The top hat fell off the snowman. But once we put that back on, you know, it's purring like a kitten now. You know, he could tell me anything and I would believe it because I don't know what's going on underneath that thing.
Brad, you just had the age old thing happen to you. A made up word was just thrown at you.
I mean, I've never. Have you ever heard of a throttle body?
Oh well, Brad, what your problem here, sir, is that you've got a recalcitrant recombinator, and you don't want that. That's gonna be $1,000 for that recalcitrant recombinator. You're gonna want to get that fixed right away, sir. So,
geez, hey, see, I'm glad that you're a professional. I thought it was my bifurcated invertebrator.
Oh no, this is gonna be your recalcitrant recombinator, sir. That's gonna be. Oh boy, if that doesn't work, then your Jehoshaphat doesn't get the proper ignition sequence.
And then I had my Jehoshaphat calibrated last week, for crying out loud. How can it be
that?
Well,
that's your problem, sir. See, and also, there might be, we're not sure yet until we get in there, but it might also be your dirty throttle body. So we're going to have to throw all those in. So, Brad, I got to tell you one of the most amazing stories from my marriage. Are you ready for, and this is the most on-brand.
Oh, I'm always here for those stories, yeah.
This is the most on-brand story I've ever told you, I think, probably, because it involves cake and Dave Kellett. There's two things that go hand in hand. So, I marry my beautiful wife. It was 18 years ago yesterday, I married my beautiful wife. As you do, apparently, there was a chunk of the cake left over. The top section of a three-tiered cake was set aside to save, right? And so I don't know what they did. Saran wrapped it or tinfoiled it. They tinfoiled it. And by the time we got back from our honeymoon, it was sitting in the freezer, right?
Yeah.
And so we're living in our little one-bedroom tiny studio apartment in Los Angeles. And anytime she's working late at work or I come home from a jog or something, I'm like, ooh, look at that wedding cake up in the freezer. And I got a little fork out and I would have a bite of it, right? And I have another bite and that kind of thing. And slowly, over the course of the year, I've eaten the entire top of the wedding cake, right? There's maybe a third of a fist left of cake. That's all that's left of this once 12 to 15 inch cake topper, right, from our wedding. Yeah. And then a year rolls around. It's our 1 year anniversary. And she goes, oh, hooray. Now we can do the tradition where we get out the cake and we eat it. And I go, what? What tradition? No. And she goes, that's why we save the top of the cake. You eat it at the 1 year mark. And I go, oh, don't look in the freezer. And she's like, what happened? Who ate this cake? And I was like, I did slowly over the course of a whole year. It was amazing. Because, you know, anytime you don't have Oreos in the house or you're like, I'd love some ice cream. Oh, we're out of ice cream. Yeah, well, I'll just eat the wedding cake. I'll eat some of that wedding cake. That's fine.
One bite of wedding cake. No one's going to miss it.
Right. And it's frozen wedding cake. You're thinking like, I'm not stealing from anyone. It's my own wedding cake. This is fine. And oh boy, did I get into the thick of it by eating that cake over there. She's like, no, I was saving it for the tradition.
Didn't it even cross your mind to tell her that you'll go get it and then go and get like a replacement wedding cake?
No, well, A, no, it didn't even occur to me. And B,
it would have occurred to me.
how do you even going about ordering someone making a match to just the top of your wedding cake? Like, how would I go into a baker? Hey, so listen, I'm bad at self-control and I need to order an entire top of a wedding cake.
You all of a sudden find yourself in a sitcom premise. And then that one guy comes in, and everybody has worked with a guy like this, right? He comes in and he's got to be, and I'll form the head. And it's like, you know what? We're all working here, Jerry. We're all doing our part. Yeah, you get to be the head. I don't need you to rub my face in it every freaking time we make the robot.
I love this as a bit. This is a funny bit. You know what, Jerry? You've had everything handed to you your entire life.
No pun intended. I should know, I'm the hand.
Jerry, your dad got you into college. Jerry, your dad got you this Voltron job. You're a son of a bitch, Jerry. No need to rub it in our face every day. Let's just fight Glorgon and go home like every other day.
I've been over here. I came into Voltron and in the mailroom. I'm over here in the left hand. The left hand does absolutely nothing. But you know what? I'm happy to be here. I'm just happy to have some place to go. I'm happy to have, health insurance. They've got a good dental here. I'm the left hand. So big deal. I don't hold the sword. I don't throw a lot of punches. I'm the left hand. Every time we make the robot, you got to push my nose right deep in it, and I'm tired of it. Jerry, I think it's time for you to be the left foot just for a little while. Let somebody else be the head. And maybe every once in a while, we won't have to go through like 10 minutes of programming before finally we pull out this victory just before the show goes off the air.
Yeah. Jerry, why don't you call us to form Voltron first thing? There's literally no difference in expenditure of energy, and yet we can destroy the creature in 5 seconds.
Yeah, we know we're going to get there. We know we're going to get there eventually. Let's just flip all the cards over, go right to the robot, go back, grab a little something at the diner, and call it a day. The overtime is killing me. I haven't seen my wife in weeks.
You know what, Jerry? I had just finished making myself a delicious bowl of pho, and we get called out to fight Glorgon. Let's just form the robot and go home. Why, Jerry? Why do you got to make it a long walk every time?
Yeah, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why, Jerry. Because you got to be the one to say, I'll form the head. Because if it comes too early, you don't feel good about yourself. You always got to be the one that feels like he's sweeping and saving everybody. Well, listen, next time I'll form the head. You form the hand. Let's see.
Can you imagine a fight where the left hand is like trying to reformat itself into a head? It's like, no, I'm forming the head. God damn it, Jerry. Jerry, you're a son of a bitch.
You've got the arm on top of the shoulders and the head is over there and the shoulder socket on the left-hand side.
It just looks like a kid that built the Lego thing wrong. It's just... You know what's even funnier, though, is that I was always a big fan of Vehicle Voltron, which is like 98 vehicles coming together to form Voltron.
Because
the idea for me that always cracked me up is like, it's like cars, trucks, boats, RVs. Someone's got like a meter-made car. There's like 98 cars that are coming together to form Voltron. But the funny thing is, with the other one, with the five lions, there's like Greg, Bob, Susie, Little Timmy, you know, Johnny Eats Too Much, the other one. And then... with the Vehicle Voltron, though, it's like, all right, 78 of us are here, but we can't form Voltron because Gary's on the shitter again. God, Gary, stop going to that Mexican place. You know that it doesn't do your stomach any good.
We can't form the left knee because Susan's over there double parked. She's caught in traffic on the 58 throughway. Listen, we're just going to have to go without the left knee for a little bit. Just keep your legs straight, and we'll try to fight this giant lizard.
Everybody that's in the lower leg, just hang out over here. We're gonna hop into this battle, and you guys stay over there. It's also, there's so many vehicles, and it's like, all form the kneecap, all form the left spleen, all form the lower part of the kidney, all form the colonoscopy part.
And I'll form the appendix. I'm not necessary, but I'm here. And I'll form the head. God damn it, Jerry.
Jerry, you are in the lions. You do not get to be in the vehicles, too.
You don't even fit. And do they ever have compatibility problems? Like when you switch from USB to USB 2 or something, do they have to get like an adapter? Like one of the lions is like a SCSI port, and they've got to get one of those adapters.
Jerry comes to work drunk, and the head's on backwards. They're like, damn it, Jerry, you are such a trust fund baby. Okay, so my big seller at San Diego Comic-Con was my pug book and the new one that I have. And this woman at one point, perfectly pleasant woman, comes up and goes, hey, I want to get this pug book for a friend back home. But they're very religious. Is this a religious book?
A religious
and
pug book.
I wanted to be so sarcastic in that moment. I don't know what would cause me. I didn't say it, but I wanted to say, well, The pug has not yet accepted Jesus Christ as their personal savior yet.
No, it is an unrepentant pug, as most of them are.
Beth and I were joking around in the booth the rest of the weekend, like, well, I mean, the pug is not explicitly a Satanist, but there are some Satanist elements in the book. So,
yeah, there are some themes, some underlying themes of satanic pugism.
Yeah. Well, like, God. As a Wiccan dog owner, like, the jokes just wrote themselves all weekend, you know. But I found that such a strange question. Like, oh, this dog book looks lovely. Is it a religious book? Like, what?
All dogs are Satan. All dogs are unreligious. Have you seen where they put their noses half the time? These are not religious creatures.
I think that movie might have lied about all dogs going to heaven. I don't know about that.
Purgatory at best.
Yeah, at best. Yeah, they're sitting there with Dante working their way up purgatory. That, there's no way they're... Hey, Brad.
Yeah.
You gotta listen to this. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go.
Turn camera.
Marked.
102, take one. With overlap, action, please.
Nothing's happening.
You just wait.
Action, awesome, please.
Can you just do anything?
No, sorry. Yeah, rolling. 102, take two.
This is a very drunk Orson Welles.
Ah, the French champagne has always been celebrated for its excellence. There is a California champagne by Paul Masson, inspired by that same French excellence. It's fermented in the bottle, and like the best French champagne, it's vintage dated. So Paul Masson.
He is soused.
102, take three. Action, please.
Champagne has always been celebrated for its excellence. There is a California champagne by Paul Masson, inspired by that same French excellence. It's fermented in the bottle.
Much like me.
Fermented in the bottle. Just like me.
I'm loving the image of you podcasting this entire show with a blanket on your head, though. This is great. This is like Howard Hughes moment. You've got like all your jars. You've got all your jars of urine next to you. You've got your toenail shavings. You've got your blanket over your head. How's the spruce goose coming over there, Howard?
Yeah, basically the only thing new is the blanket, but.
Oh my god, that got me. Oh god, that is funny.
I gotta tell you, that's one thing I realized out in Los Angeles. Making you laugh may be one of my great joys because you've got such a genuine and honest laugh, and I'm not quite funny enough to do it often. But when it happens, it's joyous.
Oh my god. Oh, every 3 years when it happens, it's so fun.
Yeah, well, knock knock jokes just aren't as potent as they used to be, you know?
No, so I gotta ask you, so with this blanket on your head, is this like the warmest the back of your head has been in a while?
Okay, so my bald spot has gotten a little bit bigger. You don't need to make a thing about it.
Brad, I got something before we start the show that I want to share with you from this week that kind of was amazing. So I'm at the dentist, and don't worry, I'm not going to get too detailed about the dentist. I know that freaks some people out. I'm at the dentist, and I'm getting work done from, like, I had a high school football injury that the tooth repair had lasted 25 years, and then my dentist took a look at it and goes, well, that's about the end of that life. We're going to have to fix that. And so... again, back to my football days. Here we go, Brad. But anyway.
Yeah, I was picking up on that. All of your ailments go back to playing high school football.
Oh, I'm never letting my children play football. I lost a quadricep muscle. I lost like three molars. And the ones that survived got beat to shit. Anyway, so I'm at the dentist, And it turns out that my lower jaw, there's something weird about the way the nerve endings work, and it takes an incredibly large amount of anesthetic to numb my lower jaw. And this is how we found out. He gives me 3 shots of the anesthetic. He gives it about 10 minutes. He comes back in. He goes, all right, I think we're safe to start drilling. And he starts to drill. And literally, Brad, my left foot shot up in the air. Like 3 feet, just like almost a SpongeBob, just boing, where he hit a nerve, and I was like, oh, biscuits. I had no control over it.
It was like that nerve was just connected directly to your foot.
You know how, like, jokingly in like comedy movies, when they like poke a brain, and like you can make somebody's eye twitch, or you can make their hand wiggle when you poke their brain in different spots? That's exactly what this felt like. The dentist was like, all right, well, we're just going to start some light drilling. Foot just goes boing.
Oh, my God. It's a good thing that needle was in a couple inches to the left.
And then I usually tip the guy 10, 20 bucks.
Oh, no. Was I supposed to be tipping?
Well, I'm a nice person, Brad. That's the difference between you and
whiz. I never even thought of tipping. Oh, I'm a horrible
Brad Geiger,
person.
Good human being.
No, the thought never crossed my mind.
Well, I usually ask them a very specific way if they could place the pallet. And sometimes it's a dance they have to do with one of those pallet jacks, you know.
Yeah.
But sometimes if you ask the person to put the pallet in a very specific spot, it literally saves you 20 minutes and a bunch of back problems, depending on where you have to unload it from, you know?
Oh, sure.
So I just introducing you to a concept. Usually when someone does something nice for you, Brad, what you do is you do something nice in return. And that's usually monetary since it's a job. And that's what we call a tip in American nomenclature. So I give them a tip to say thank you for the kindness that they've done for me. Brad Geiger, learning about basic niceties.
I wasn't being completely, listen, I wasn't being completely a bore. I gave him a real firm handshake and patted his shoulder and told him I really appreciated it.
I like the idea that the guy, while he's helping you, he's like dropping all these hints. He's like, boy, sure is cold out. Hope all 5 of my kids got to school okay. Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's tough to have kids. You better get going.
Going to be an expensive trip to the supermarket today. Cough, cough. And Brad's like, well, sure has been nice getting these books from you. Thanks so much. Here's a firm handshake. All right. I did my part as a citizen.
Is that your internal voice for me? I'm a whole falsetto higher than my baritone.
Oh, can't wait to get back to Disneyland. Do-do-do-do-do. Anyway, have a nice day, Mr. Truck Driver. Gotta go. So, Brad, the most fascinating thing happened this week. I was buying a piece of IKEA furniture online. I know, high living. I'm living big, living large. But I was buying a piece of IKEA furniture online. And at the end of the purchase process, it says, hey, do you want to sign up for inspirational emails from IKEA? And I was like, what? Why is IKEA wanting to send me, what is that email from IKEA? Why would IKEA have anything inspirational to tell me? Like, Hans, every week is like, hello, everyone. Hans checking in again. Just wanted to tell you to reach for the stars and you can achieve your dreams if you do it. Especially with our new Sklurgan. With the new Sklurgan, you can hold all your books on one shelf. Like, what is that email? I need you to stage an intervention and say, David, you got to know when to fold them and know when to walk away. And I need you to, is it Kenny Loggins? No, not Kenny Loggins. Kenny Rogers. I need you to Kenny Rogers me.
Yeah, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them, man. Don't you remember when Kenny Rogers was on the Muppet Show and he sang that song in the stagecoach?
Yep. You know what I thought? I just wish Kenny Rogers' plastic surgeon had told him that. Kenny, we can do this nose job. Listen, we can do it, but you got to know when to hold them.
fold them. Know when to fold, when to fold them. Know when to walk away. Know when to run. You gotta stop this wow. facelift. Because you're looking like
you're
a freakazoid.
You're fully invested in this joke, aren't you?
Brad, I just realized something. I got to tell you this. In preparation for the show, I made myself some tea for my throat because I sound like an old hobo riding the rails, right?
Yeah.
And there were two types of tea right next to each other in our tea drawer. One was throat coat, which I put with a little bit of honey to help my throat.
Yeah.
But right next to it was a tea called Smooth Move. And boy...
is that a laxative?
It is a laxative, and that would have been a very different podcast had I put the wrong tea in my cup for the show.
They actually call it Smooth Move?
They call it Smooth Move, which I think like every copywriter in that room must have been high-fiving when the marketing team accepted that as the name. Let's call the tea Smooth Move.
Oh, my God, that's beautiful.
I mean, because like... What else do you call a tea that makes you get the trots? I mean, like, it
makes you do.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, we've been pitching a lot of names here, and we came up with the first one on the list is Johnny Craps-a-Lot. We don't feel like that's a good name. And the only other one we got here is Smooth Move. How about Smooth Move? Is that going to work? All right. Everybody agrees. Hands up around the room, and we're going with Smooth Move. All right. Here we go.
We were going to... Oh my God. Oh God. I don't know why, but that totally got me.
So Brad, I had a fun memory pop into my head this morning, and by fun I mean one of the more embarrassing things I've ever done in my life.
Do tell.
So first of all, I should tell you that I am never a smooth mover when it came to romance or anything like that.
Where the story is going already.
My wife always had to make the first move in any regard because I was always like, well, I'd hold your hand if that was something you wanted to do. I don't want to be forward. Or untoward. Anyway, my wife and I are, I don't know if we were married at this point or about to get, no, we were not married yet. We were about a year out from being married. We'd been dating for about 8 years.
Okay.
And we're in Los Angeles, and a friend of ours who had started making it big in his career, and by making it big, I mean he was third assistant to some actor, invited us to a movie premiere. And it was our first movie premiere in Los Angeles. It was at the beautiful Fox Theater in Westwood, California, right by UCLA. It's an old 1920s, 30s, gigantic theater. I think it's where they did the premiere for Star Wars. I don't remember. But it's a beautiful old theater. And we get in there and they give you your free popcorn and your free soda and your free candy bar, or whatever. I'm like, oh boy, don't we feel like bigwigs? We're in a movie theater premiere. This is amazing. And we're coming out of the movie and there's a huge crushing crowd. And my wife is significantly shorter than I am. She's about 5'1". I'm like 5'8". And she's standing right in front of me. And I turn as the crowd is milling forward, everyone trying to get out, a few thousand people trying to get out. As the crowd is milling forward, I turn to talk to my friend who had invited us. And I turn back. And as you do as a husband or a boyfriend, I kind of nuzzle my chin into the back of my wife's head and give her a little kiss on the top of her scalp, right from the back of her head.
Yeah, as you do.
As one does. You know, a kind of sweet little, just like we're walking through a crowd and we're stuck together. I'm just giving you a little smooch. Uh-huh. Anyway, the slow turnaround of a head that is not my wife's reveals a woman's face that is horrified that I have just nuzzled into the back of her head and kissed her scalp line. And I've just admitted that I am not smooth in any way, shape, or form, have just done the most horrifying act I've ever done in my life. And I immediately go, I'm so sorry.
Gloria, I need your help.
I'm literally like looking around going, Mom. Like it was that kind of, and then my wife, who is standing right next to the woman, realizes what's just happened and goes, what? Like literally the look on her face is like, what are you doing? I was like, I thought it was you.
And all of a sudden, Dave turns into Lou Costello.
Brad, I have to explain to you that I never have my cheeks been more red hot. Just scald, like you would have cooked an egg on my cheeks. And my hands immediately flop sweat, both palms. And I'm like, how about... And I'm trying to, and there's no way to not look like a creep in the situation because I was a creep. Like, I was the creep in the situation. This poor woman is just trying to walk out of a movie theater, and I give her a smooch on the back of her head, and she's like, who the hell are you? And so my wife, thank God for my wife, she steps in and he goes, you'll have to excuse him. He's an idiot.
Oh, my God.
So, Brad, when it comes time, I want to say this as a parent, when it comes time, if you need me to talk to your children about how to date in the world and how to be successful, call anyone else but me. Don't call me. I am not your source.
I might actually have them call you because I could see some benefit to this. I certainly don't have to worry about like teen pregnancy. And so we get on the bus and they had, you know, drinks on the bus and everything. So we queue up, get our orderly little pint-sized Coronas to take on the bus. And then we wait and we wait for the couple over there from Brazil who's been taking smoochy selfies. You know that selfie you got to take with your girlfriend that when you're kissing her and you got to catch it on a selfie?
Sure.
Every freaking time this bus slowed down to less than 10 miles an hour, the phone came out and they had to take a smoochy selfie.
This is such the complaint of the nerd Midwesterner. These people who are having a lot of sex, what are they? These jerks who are happy and attractive and enjoying their life. These jerks.
This guy had to have a 48-inch chest. This guy barrel-chested and tan.
Look at these attractive people who are enjoying their vacation. Gosh darn it. Why can't they be on time?
They got to be kissing in front of the Chichen Itza temple. They got to be kissing in front of the ball field. Every time you turn around, they're freaking kissing in front of the camera. They're so busy kissing.
Meanwhile, Brad's over there standing with his black socks and his flip-flops and the zinc on his nose and he's got his terrible Hawaiian shirt on. I just don't understand why these people have to smooch so much. Why do they have to have fun on their vacation? This is unacceptable. Look at these people having sex and drinking and enjoying themselves on their vacation. This is not the way we in the Midwest do it, but I tell you what.
They should be queued up over here out in the hot sun behind this German guy. Yeah.
Get over here and stand next to Hans. Come on, let's get out of this bus.
Unbelievable. But yeah, that was kind of the high point of my trip. Queuing up with the Germans. Also, I did something I never did before that I always wanted to do, and I'm not sure whether I'm going to do it again. I went snorkeling.
Hey!
So I was out there with the manta rays and the sea turtles. By the way, those guys on Little Nemo
I just thought of Brad's internal monologue as he's swimming. Look at all these fish enjoying themselves, having sex, relaxing. Why aren't they lining up in an orderly fashion 10 minutes early? These fish are ridiculous. We wouldn't put up with this in the Midwest.
Oh, my God. But we were out on the ocean. It was so choppy. I was starting to get pretty green around the gills by the end. I was happy to get back on the boat. Carolyn loved it. She was having a Jacques Cousteau moment. She was having a great time. But that's something I might want to try again in calmer waters. But it was a great trip.
I got to tell you the one time snorkeling, this is a longer story than you wanted, and I didn't anticipate launching into it, but long story short, Glow and I were in Hawaii, this is my first time ever in Hawaii, and she was watching the kids at one point, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to go snorkeling, and there's a bay called Turtle Bay, right? And
yeah.
I approached the bay from the wrong side. This will come into play later in the story. I walked in from the long side, and I go, oh, okay, here's where I go swimming. And I started swimming. I'm out there snorkeling by myself. There was like no one there.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, this gigantic sea turtle comes swimming by me. And I go, wow, look at the majesty of that thing. Look at the size of that thing. And then as you do, you get a little braver and you get closer and closer to it. And then I, at one point, I reached out. I was like, I just want to touch its shell. And I touched the shell and I was like, wow, feel that. That's amazing. And then I was like, you know what? I wonder if it could pull me. And so I grabbed the kind of the front of its shell by the back of its head and it's pulling me around. I'm like, this is magical. I'm being pulled around by a sea turtle. And then like after about a half an hour of swimming, I go back in the shore. And then I come in, I exit the bay the way you should have come in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's giant signs everywhere like, don't touch the turtles, you jackasses. Listen, you tourists, you dummies. Don't touch the turtles. Like, you're introducing 1,000 diseases to them. Don't touch. And I was like, Brad, I got to tell you, like, my instant flop sweat and of, like, just the dumb shittery of having touched the turtle. And in the meanwhile, cut back to me in the bay. Whee! The turtle is pulling me around. Whee! This is magical. I'm having a magical commune with nature. 10 minutes later, listen, you dipshits, whatever you do, don't touch the turtles. Don't touch the turtles.
You can do whatever you want out there. Don't touch. And then Dave slowly looks over his shoulder to see a turtle just on his back, bobbing up and down with X's in his eyes.
Just bubbles surrounding the turtle. Just
it's the first turtle to ever die of Drakkar poisoning.
Drakkar Noir? That's amazing. What a great... Can I tell you, there's always so much humor in specificity, and the specificity of Drakkar Noir is what sold that. That's amazing. I thought you were going to say, I look back to the bay and there's just one turtle, like, you just see its torso and its head out of the water and it's just flipping me off. It's just like, you jerk! You jerk!
Check it out, says the little boy.
Oh, no.
I'm watching sci-fi over Wi-Fi.
Oh, no.
And I have my Wi-Fi sci-fi blaring in hi-fi. Silent penultimate panel. The duck says, yeah, time for me to go bye-bye. From my Wi-Fi hi-fi sci-fi?
I'm attacked. I feel attacked right. Don't read a second one. Do not
How
read
is
a second one.
You can feel
it. Stop it. Stop it.
I got to say, in the spirit of friendship, Brad's answer was long enough there where I was able to go make a sandwich and mow the lawn. And so I missed probably a few chunks of it, but I think in general, I agree with the spirit of Brad's answer. I took a small nap at some point in the middle there.
Did you take a nap and hear my voice in your head?
Yeah, it just lifted me off to sleep. I got to say, though, as a partner, it was nice to be included in that conversation. Brad turning to me for my input, asking me what my thoughts were. That was nice. Brad's a sharer. He's a sharing partner.
I paused a couple times to allow you to say, yeah, I... And that was all there was time for.
Yeah, this was me on the other end of the microphone. Yeah, but
thank goodness that I've got the size lungs I have, because if I would have taken a deeper breath, you'd still be trying to get a word in edgewise.
By the way, that's all one breath for Brad, egotistical Geiger over there, just talking for 11 minutes straight. No, I'm kidding. Yes. Okay. So I got to tell you the story from San Diego Comic-Con. So Beth and I are working the booth and the day's going great. It was a Saturday, I think it was. And the sales were fantastic. I was very busy. And this older woman, about 75, 78, comes up to the booth and she's like, what's this? And I go, oh, that's my sci-fi collection drive. Feel free to have a read through. And I give her the quick pitch of it. And she goes, so here was the trigger moment. I should have seen this coming. She goes, do you do sci-fi conventions? And I go, nah, they're not really for me. I like to do Comic-Cons and that's about it. Yeah. And she goes, well, this honest to God is how she launches in. Well, that's why you're failing.
Oh,
you need
no.
to be going. You need to be going to sci-fi conventions. And I said, well, I didn't say this, but in my mind, I'm like, well, hold on. We're taking a big leap by using the word failing. Yeah. First of all. That's kind of a big running jump there, is to say that someone who, first of all, who says that out loud? Second of all, who says it to a stranger that you've literally just met and know nothing about?
I'll tell you who. The mother of the making a go of it guy.
So she was not a reader, by the way. She was just someone who came up to the booth, right? Just someone coming by.
She's just a rando.
And she goes, well, let me ask you then, why don't you do sci-fi conventions? There's a reason why you're not breaking into sci-fi. She literally goes, you want to be a sci-fi artist? You want to be a sci-fi artist? You've got to go to sci-fi conventions.
Oh, my God.
And Everything in me was doing the, you were raised well, David, be polite to your elders. You were raised well, be polite to your elders. Don't say anything.
Oh, you're a better man than I am.
And so I was like, well, yes, ma'am. I want to be a sci-fi artist.
Oh my gosh. You played into her game.
I know. Well, I couldn't get out of it. The politeness was digging me deeper. And she's like, listen, I'm going to tell you, if you want to make a career in sci-fi, you've got to go to a sci-fi convention. And I was like, well, they don't really work for me. And she goes, why would a sci-fi convention really work for you?
Oh my goodness.
And I wanted to say, well, it's because everybody at a sci-fi convention is 85 years old and white and like locked down what they're reading 40 years ago and no one buys anything.
And borderline belligerent in their attitude.
Yeah, exactly.
Holy moly.
I was like, well, for me, the two or three sci-fi conventions that I've gone to, it's a very specific group that like last found a new author when Ray Bradbury was hitting the scene, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I love the Martian Chronicles. I want more like that. You know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
So anyway, I finally shake it by being like, well, agree to disagree. I don't really think comics or sci-fi conventions are for me. Right? Yeah. That's the end of it. Okay, thank God that conversation's over. Moving on to the next customer.
10 Day times goes, more polite than I would have been.
Right. Okay. But you think it's over, Brad.
Yeah.
Guess what? She came back to the booth two more times to keep telling me to go do sci-fi conventions.
No.
And Beth and I are like, what's happening? Well, how did we trigger this person that she's got like a personal goal now, a vendetta to come get me to do a sci-fi convention? I'm like, I don't want to do sci-fi conventions. They don't work for me. And she's like, listen, she keeps saying it this way, though, Brad. She's like, listen, do you want to succeed in sci-fi or not? And I was like, well, yeah, I'm listen. Eventually, I got a little more stern. I'm like, I'm doing fine. Everything's fine. I don't want to do it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, she's literally putting you in the position where you've got to say something really douchey, like, listen, I'm making X amount of money. There are more NBA players than there are cartoonists making their full living from this. I'm one of those. Now go away.
Also, just everything in me, the way I was raised, was like, you don't brag, and you definitely don't brag to strangers, you know?
Right, right.
So I didn't want to be like—
Well, that's just it. If you say that, then you become the jerk.
Then I become the dick. Like, she's making me— So I can't be like, look, lady, everything's fine over here in Dave Kellett land. You just relax and move along. I can't do that, you know?
Here's my tax forms. Here's my 1040. I got it printed out just in case Ted Rall comes around. I'll show it to you. You'll see there's no T-shirts on there. Boy, you got to be old to get that reference. And there it is. Now suck an egg. No, you can't, because then you're a jerk.
So she comes by again the second time. She's like, did you give more thought to the sci-fi convention? I'm like, yeah, it's not for me.
You're kidding me.
No, I am 100% not kidding you. And Beth is like, what is with this person? And Beth nailed it. She's like, at this point, it's just narcissistic. It's like, I'm going to fix your problem. By the way, there's no problem to fix. But she comes back. Okay, so the third time she comes back with a printed out application for a show in LA.
She's like,
you send this application in and you tell them that we met at this show and that you need a panel, because if you get a panel, then you'll get a bunch of people come to the booth. I'm like, yeah, I know how conventions work. And she's like, you fill this out and then you go to that show and you're going to find success in sci-fi. You've got to start applying yourself. And I was like, how did I get in this? God, I just want anything but this conversation. Yeah. This is terrible.
And did you catch a name? Was her last name Isimov or something? I mean, was she the queen of sci-fi conventions? Was she the central diplomat of the Hugo Awards?
Yeah. I mean, like if it was something like, hi, I'm Ursula Le Guin and I'm here to help your career. You'd be like, all right, I'm ready to listen.
Yeah.
Not a septuagenarian that's like, here's what you're doing wrong. You need to go to sci-fi conventions. I'm going to fix your career.
You want to succeed, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That was the most dickish phrase. Well, you want to succeed, don't you? You want to be in sci-fi. Clear, you're writing these books. And a version of it was, well, I mean, you want to get past this self-publishing stuff. And I was like, I'm fine. This is literally paying for my career. Yeah, I'm fine with self-publishing. What are you trying to get me to accomplish? By the way, I talked to sci-fi authors, Brad. I know what they make working for sci-fi publishers.
Yeah.
I don't want to go down that path.
No kidding. No kidding.
Meanwhile, you turn to the sci-fi author next week going, well, you want to succeed, don't you? You got to self-publish. You know, what are you yeah. looking at this for?
But just the hubris of, well, like, well, you want to succeed. Imagine it, Brad, if I had never met you and I walked up to you at a convention, like, what kind of hubris and narcissism do you have to have in your heart to be like, well, you want to succeed, right? Well, listen to me the next three times I visit you as I tell you how to succeed.
My blood pressure is going up just listening to this secondhand. If I would have been there, I would have been livid. There's a real amount of, we haven't found the right word. It's not hubris. It borderlines on entitlement. It's like, I know what's right for you, even though I know nothing about the road you're walking. But I'm going to tell you everything about how you should be doing it. Here, it's a great line from Glengarry Glen Ross, which I quote constantly. Here's a piece of gum. Let me show you how to chew it. Oh, hold on, Dave. Hold on. Yeah, come in. Lady, are you lost?
What's happening?
Hold on, Dave. I got to talk. Oh, you're the lady that talked to Dave at Comic-Con a couple weeks ago? What are you doing with that piano? Why? You've got something that you want to talk to Dave, and it's got to be done in song? Okay. Do you want to work in sci-fi?
Oh,
let's draw some stars. I see you failing at your booth. You're so uncouth. You ought to be on Mars. I got an application. Just sign your name. Don't follow the road you're on. Do you want to work in sci-fi? It really should be sci-fi. Do a con.
Wow. Wow. Brad Geiger, everybody.
Key change. Do you want to work in sci-fi with robots, droids, and ships? You'll never earn much more than hugs with books on pugs. Don't give me any lip.
What's happening?
You need a little guidance, and I'm just the one to show you the proper way. Do you want to be in sci-fi? You really ought to be in sci-fi. Start today. My God. She just left the studio. She wanted to say.
Oh, my goodness. What a nice lady to come by.
And now, how she found my studio in Philadelphia, I have no idea.
So, Brad, do you remember with the Muppets, Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem?
Oh, my God. I love that. That may have been, next to Statler and Waldorf, Dr. Teeth may have been my favorite little part of the Muppet Show.
Oh, all four of them, or five of them, rather, were fantastic. But the thing that I always loved about it is that Henson and Oz were able to somehow be like, hey, you know what's fine for kids? Let's just incorporate drug culture and the Grateful Dead into the Muppets. That's fine. No parents will mind that. That's fine.
It's quite all right. Yes.
Yeah, they were all high as kites. And anyway, I was thinking about them today because my little pupper has been on Valium for medical reasons.
Valium.
And it's like living with a member of Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem. I'm like, hey, buddy, you want to go outside and pee? Oh, yeah, man, I do have to pee. I'd love to go outside. Yeah. Hey, buddy, hop up onto the couch and I'll give you a scritch behind your neck. Okay, let me just get these. Man, you ever looked at your paws? Oh, wow. Look at my paws, brother. They're just amazing. This is awesome. Oh, my paws are so furry. Whoa. He is high as a kite. High as a kite.
All right. Now, listen, Ollie, it's time to eat.
Oh, man, I could really go. You got a cheeseburger? Come on, help a brother out. I'd love a cheeseburger,
I've got this nice bowl of dog food for you. Right over here, it's a bowl of dog food. No problem.
Well,
this is
a legit truth. I put the dog bowl in front of him, and he just kind of stared at it for like 3 minutes. Not like made a move, just like head down, like looking at the bowl like, How many bowls are there in front of me? I'm going to go for the center one, I think. I don't know which one to go for.
This doesn't look like Doritos.
It's weird, though, when your dog looks up at you and goes, "You ever tasted a number?" Hey, man, have you ever smelled hope? Oh, wow. Dude, I've got some. Listen, time is an illusion, my friend. We're all floating in a cosmic vat of love. Hey, let's go for a walk, man. I want to meet people and tell them about how great they are.
Ooh, oh, I'm telling you, man, as soon as I get done with this bowl of dog food, I'm going to tell you about time. Time is a continuum, man. I keep telling you, it's a continuum. I keep telling you.
Hey, put your cartooning pen down, man. I want to tell you about how we're all connected by love. We're all connected, man. It's a oneness between us. You don't see it, but my eyes have been open.
And then he's just actively peeing on the floor.
My eyes have been open, man. What, is that me? Oh, God, is that me? I'm sorry, brother. Hold on. Whoa.
And my wife calls and she goes, so I came home from work and the kids were off. By the way, this is important. Both boys were off on a trip with their grandparents.
Okay.
They went on a little trip and to look at Frank Lloyd Wright architecture. Because my younger son has really been interested in architecture and my older son was into it. And they're like, oh, yeah, we'll go on a trip and we'll see some houses and whatnot.
Where did they go? Falling Water or which
yes,
one did they go
yes,
to?
Yes, as a matter of fact, yeah.
Hey, that's cool. That Falling Water is my favorite one of his. That house is amazing.
Yeah. So they're off. The house is empty. My wife gets home from work. She calls me and she says, so there's a dog in the house.
And I said, what?
What? And she says, there's a dog right now sleeping on our living room sofa. And I can hear the dog happily bark, you know, at the news. Right. And I'm like, wait a minute. I didn't put a dog in the house. The house has been empty since I left it. How did a dog get in the house? She's all happy. I don't know, she says, but there's a dog in the house. I go, wait a minute. Is there somebody upstairs, like, sleeping it off?
Oh, no. Oh, no. I wouldn't have thought about that.
Did somebody, like, oh, that's the first place my brain went to. It's like, did somebody, like, break in, look for a good place to, you know, lie down for a little while?
Can I just say, in contrast of friendship, my brain went, hooray, a dog. Your brain went, murderer. There's a murderer in the house.
There's a vagrant upstairs.
Meanwhile, I'm just imagining a happy tale. Happy tale, let's get him a bone. You're like, there's someone with a knife.
And Carolyn was the same way. I'm like, have you gone upstairs yet? She says, it's a dog. It's a dog. It's brown with white spots and it's a dog. And I'm like, wait. Do you want to go upstairs while I'm on the phone? She says, he's wagging his little tail. And I'm like, stop. You've got to concentrate. There may be danger. And I couldn't get her to concentrate. She was like, just off to the races. And so she's like, well,
So here's the problem, though. And maybe you're not familiar with this. What she was experiencing this, and your heart might not be familiar, is joy. And so you've got to allow people to feel joy, Brad. That's the kicker. She's like, oh, hooray, a dog. No, quiet. What are you doing? What's happening? Why are you smiling and laughing? What is that?
Oh, you know what? I know you're joking, but that's exactly what was happening. Our phone conversation. So I stand up and I go to Asia. I go, that's it. Day's over. We're going home because she's not searching the house and someone has to search the house and I need to go home. So I take Asia to the train station. I go home and I caught really good traffic for some reason. Shot down 95, come in, and there's Carolyn with this dog, happy as can be. And she says, don't bother searching upstairs. She says, I found out the answer. And I said, what? She says, well, I called the number on his dog tag, and the dog belongs to the neighbor three doors down.
Oh.
I go, what's he doing here?
Was and there a window open or a door open? No,
I'm looking all over for something like that. Well, it turns out, and originally I blamed the kids. Turns out old dad here left the basement door unlocked when he left for the studio. And the dog walker that picked up the dog at the neighbor's house, it was the dog walker's first day on the job, and he got confused as to which house he was at. And our garage looks somewhat like the garage. We've got the old carriage style doors on the garage, you know, like from a horse's carriage. And so do they. And he thought he was at the house that he was supposed to be at. And he opened up the door and it was unlocked. So he let the dog in.
Oh, my God.
And so he lets the dog in, leaves the leash in the basement, turns around, sets the, you know, like you in the doorknob, there's a little thing that you turn clockwise and then the door is locked.
Brad, try to spot the dog walker that's not getting a tip that week.
Oh, my God. Our neighbor was furious.
As you should be. Your dog ends up three doors down in a different house.
Well, and if Carolyn had decided she was going to go out for drinks with friends, and if she would have stayed out and I would have stayed at the studio, this guy would have come home to an empty house looking for his dog. Called the dog walker. The dog walker would have said, well, I brought him home. This guy would have been panicked.
Meanwhile, whatever the dumb neighbor was that left his door unlocked and then accused his wife of not being scared enough of murderers, whoever that guy is the real villain in this story. That's the neighbor that's the real dummy.
He's a jerk. And of course,
his
first things was, those boys, I told them to lock the door when they brought groceries in. And it was like, no, because then you left the house because we retraced our steps. And sure enough, I was the one who had left. And so, I left the door unlocked. And so there was a dog sitting on the couch when my wife came home.
That's right. Those are the best moments as a parent where you're like working yourself up into a lather. Like you're like, who left the sink running? It was me. Oh, I left the sink running. Oh, God. Everyone go back to what you're doing. Daddy's an idiot.
Yep. And they all nod knowingly.
Yeah, exactly. That is funny, though. You're like, there is a murder in the house. And she's like, it's a dog. Hooray. There is a murder in the house. Someone left this door unlocked. Well, there's going to be hell to pay for whoever left that door unlocked.
Yeah, no kidding.
Brad, this is a sign from the heavens that you are ready for a dog in your life.
Oh, I was so scared you were going to say that. Well, here's the kicker to the whole story. We found out the name of the dog.
Okay.
Ziggy. I swear to God, I'm not making that up. The dog's name was Ziggy.
Oh, my God. And the dog turns to you with a Ziggy punch like a Ziggy punchline like dog hugs are God's way of hugging humanity.
I like the little sigh at the end. He just turns to the camera and says, it's a living.
It's a living. I kind of feel like every Ziggy punchline needs to be finished by that. Well, that's the way I ordered the soup.
I'm trying to be a better read. I'm trying to improve my writing through reading. And
well, can I suggest something?
Yeah, well, you can.
Have you tried? And this is going to sound crazy. Have you tried reading?
Yeah. It puts me right to sleep. I'm telling you, I get three pages in and my eyes get tired and I go right out.
Grandpa has a hard time once he gets those shoes off staying awake. Oh,
my
boy.
Goodness. No, I've got terrible reading habits. I've got a stack of books by my bedside that I've tried to get through and it's like they put me right to sleep. And thank God audiobooks don't do that or else I'd be, you know, careening off the road.
So, Brad, I've been lucky enough to see some beautiful things in my life. I've been able to hike down the Grand Canyon to the bottom and look up. That's amazing. I've been able to go to the Grand Tetons and Yellowstone up in Wyoming and Montana. I've been able to look out over Paris from the Eiffel Tower, hiking up the stairs. But, Brad, this past weekend, my family and I went to the San Diego Zoo, and I saw something that was perhaps one of the most amazing things I've seen in my life, which was I saw a male African bull elephant Stands about 10, 13 feet tall, weighs about 12, 13,000 pounds. It's the largest terrestrial mammal on the planet, right? I stood about 20 feet away from this thing as it took a leak, and it was amazing, Brad. It was amazing, Brad.
Majestic.
It was majestic. Nature was on full display. I was amazed. Mouth agape. I couldn't look away. I went to shield my children's eyes, but I said, no, they need to see this. No, this is important.
This is life. Yeah, this what was life? That like?
Okay, so imagine you've gone to Target or Kmart or Toys R Us and you bought a child's pool, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then you take the full 100-gallon contents of that child's pool and you pour it down the air duct of a small air conditioning system and and at the force of a jet. This elephant peeing was amazing, Brad. It was amazing. And I say kudos to nature because I was blown away by what I was witnessing.
Now, let me ask you this. About how long did it take? Because that's a lot of urine to move. How long did it take?
Brad, it took an ungodly long amount of time. I was like, how much have you been drinking, my friend? Your urologist is going to be so proud of you because you've been taking in a lot of water.
Maybe you had a prostate problem. That was it one steady stream, or did it start and stop and start and stop?
Because I'm telling you, Brad. Can you imagine if I'm like, listen, pal, we're getting up there in age, and you're going to start noticing some changes.
Well, here's why I ask, because did you know they did research on this, and the average amount of time it takes to void your bladder for all mammals is 21 seconds, regardless of size. It's true of a bull elephant, and it's true of a mouse.
Can I just say to the audience listening at home or at work right now, one of the things I love about Brad Gagger is I have sprung on him the idea that I saw a bull of elephant pee, and he knows offhand that it takes 21 seconds for a mammal to void their blood. How do you know that? How do you know that offhand?
It came across my social media somewhere. Probably one of those things you read on like Imgur or Reddit. It just came across my my transom, and I thought that's something that's worth knowing. I mean, let's face it, you're never going to forget the 21 second pee rule.
Doesn't that feel, though, like sometimes science can make declaratory statements that you're like, no one's checked this. Can you imagine the scientist is like, it doesn't matter what the mammal is. It could be a titmouse. It could be a blue whale. It takes 21 seconds for them to void their bladder. That's science. All right, moving on. Let's talk about black holes. Science is just making shit up. Nope, doesn't matter. It's a church mouse. Holes. It's a barn owl. Doesn't matter. It's 21 seconds to pee.
In 21 seconds, we're going to move over to black holes and find out how long it takes them to pee.
Yeah, how long does it take a black hole to pee? Anyway, all right. Thank you. Oh, there's the bell. I'll see you next class. All right, everyone. I've been your teacher.
I've been your teacher. Please tip your waitresses.
So, Brad, can I start off the show today by telling you a story about Ensure, the nutritional drink?
Oh, I was hoping you would.
You're like, I've been waiting. This has been my long con to get a story about Ensure.
Yeah, this whole show is going to be about my age, isn't it?
So let me tell you a little bit about something about living in Los Angeles. So when we moved into our last house, because it had just been sold and the sellers had prepped it all with flowers and pretty new bushes and gotten the grass super green and all that sort of stuff, what happens... and I'm not joking about this, is scouts come around for commercials and they literally ding-donged me at the door and they're like, hi, we want to shoot a Honda commercial outside of your house. And maybe there'd be one scene inside. Would you like to do that? And I was like, I talked to my friend Fred, who works in production for ads a lot. And I said, do I want to do this? He goes, no, they'll destroy your house. Don't do it. Anyway, so long story short, people in LA occasionally get these people that come around and scout for commercials, right? Because they're shooting a lot of commercials for this or that. Okay, cut to my friend Tom Gammel, who is a writer on one of the senior writers on The Simpsons and a delightful human being. He's one of the most fun people you'll ever talk to. Tom is at his house one Saturday morning and he's drinking his coffee and he sees a commercial crew shooting outside of his house. And because Tom has been working in television for something like 35, 40 years, he knows his rights and he walks outside and he goes, hey, first of all, he's got an incredible voice. He goes, hey, you can't be shooting outside my house. It's you're aiming right at my house there. You got to ask my permission. And the guy goes, no one here is involving your house. It's just in the background. It's no big deal. He goes, No, listen, I work at TV. I know how this works. You can't shoot my house unless you get my permission, and I don't give you permission. And they go, listen, buddy, we're almost wrapping up. No, we're not getting your permission. We're gonna finish shooting. So Tom, and I love this about him, he goes into his garage, he grabs an old bed sheet, and he grabs some a can of paint, right? And on the outside of his like rain gutters, he clips this gigantic sign on a bed sheet painted with hand paint that says, Insure killed my pappy. And he hangs it. he hangs it from his house. And the whole crew is like, you son of a bitch. Insure killed my pappy. I just thought that was amazing. Insure killed my pappy. It's the use of the word pappy that just absolutely kills me.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. I love the well, F it. This is how I'm going to handle this problem, then. If you guys aren't going to handle it legally, then I'm not going to handle it. Cool.
He may be the only cartoonist to use the word pappy in a sentence since that guy that does Snuffy Smith.
I did not think we'd be talking about Snuffy Smith today, but here we go. Oh, Snuffy Smith. Talk about language that you never see in Americana anymore. Snuffy Smith, every third word is like, wait, what? I got to get out a dictionary for that one.
Yeah. Yeah, you need a decoder ring to read a Snuffy Smith. And the thing that absolutely delights me about Snuffy Smith is that if you look at that comic, especially like on a Sunday, that the title of the comic is Barney Google and Snuffy Smith. But I'm desperate to know the reason. They have to put Barney Google really, really small letters and put Snuffy Smith up in big letters. And I don't think Barney Google has made an appearance in the comic for decades, yet he gets top billing. And I got to find out why.
Well, okay, I agree with you because Barney Google, as you know, Brad, I know you know your comics history. Barney Google was the original progenitor of that strip, right? Like that was right. The head character of that strip. And then somewhere in the late 30s, early 40s, they rolled in Snuffy Smith. He got really popular. Then it became Barney Google and Snuffy Smith. And now it's basically just the Snuffy Smith show, right? Am I wrong about that?
Last time I checked in on it, yeah.
So I wonder if there's some sort of trademarking issue or sales issue where they can't change the name because Barney Google, like last seen in 1955 for a one paneler, you know, like no one's seen Barney Google in ages.
Last time we saw Barney Google, he was in like a background shot looking in through a window with a big sign saying, Insure killed my pappy. Now, I know that from reading Anatomy of Authors. I did not know this before reading your comic. Edgar Allan Poe was inspired to write The Raven after meeting a raven at Charles Dickens' house. It was a pet of Dickens, this raven.
Yeah, isn't that weird that Charles Dickens had a pet raven who was apparently famous in both London and author circles. And Edgar Allan Poe, who's a bit of a sad sack, met the raven and was like, I better write a whole poem about this one. This is amazing.
Now, could you imagine how that went down? You know, he's at a dinner party. Nobody wants to talk to Poe. You know, he's kind of slumped in the corner.
He's off to the side with the pet. You know, that guy at a party that's off to the side just petting the dog. Like, I'm fine over here. Leave me alone.
Yeah, I know the guy. I am that guy. He's just sitting over there by the raven. He's got nothing else to do. He's like, well, fuck, nobody's talking to me. I'll just write a poem.
I'll just stand by the cheese platter and write a poem about this bird. That's fine. No, Charles Dickens, I'm fine. I'll stay over here. I'm Edgar Allan Poe.
But imagine
being Charles Dickens, though, Brad.
Yeah.
Your bird has inspired someone else. Meanwhile, you're like, that son of a bitch never gave me an idea.
You've been sitting here. I've been feeding you bird feed for years now. Not prompt one out of you. Now this sad sack comes over here, sits by the cheese tray, and next thing you know, this guy's making $9.
Look at that millionaire over there with his $9 waving into my face. You piece of shit bird. You've been crapping on my Encyclopedia Britannica collection. Get out of my house.
Yeah, that's $9 I could have had.
He just looks at the bird and he goes, nevermore. So, Brad, I don't know if I've ever told you my Paul Rudd story. Have I told you my Paul Rudd story, Brad?
I don't think you've ever told me your Paul Rudd story.
All right, so I need to give you some bigger context. So my wife works in television, so we meet a lot of Hollywood people, right?
Yeah.
But the weird thing, and she commented on it all the time, is that for the most part, I don't care. Like, they're interesting. They're like, oh, hey, I met so-and-so. But for the most part, I don't watch that much TV or movies for the most part, right?
Yeah.
And so I am not, like, an aficionado. I'm not a go-to fan.
Right.
However, Brad, there are like two or three people in Hollywood that I would die to meet. And one of them is Paul Rudd. Something about Paul Rudd I just find delightful and charming. And I feel like, and people that know him and know me, they're like, oh, you guys would get along great. Oh, Paul's amazing. And I just love his acting. I love the way he delivers a joke. I just love his kind of put upon nature. I think he's delightful. Okay, long story short, Glow and I get invited by a buddy to go to the Avengers 2 premiere, right? Mm-hmm. And it was Avengers 2. And Paul had just been cast as Ant-Man, and so he was there. Like, Marvel had invited him along to the premiere, right? I guess he was in... Boy, this story's falling apart. Anyway, he was at the party, is the long story short. And so Dave Kellett, really good at telling stories, apparently.
Never let the facts get in the way of a good story.
I know, right? So anyway, so we're standing there, we're sipping, Dave Kellett's hitting the free food as usual. Yeah. That's the big part of the story.
So you're in a good mood.
Our buddy goes, oh, there's Paul. You wanted to meet him, didn't you? And I, Brad, just imagine like holding hands and skipping down the beach as we're best friends. And, oh, look at us. We're sharing French fries because one of us is done at the hamburger place. And, oh, look at Brad. He's over for Christmas and we got sweaters on and we're sharing cocoa, right? All this stuff. And literally goes, oh, Paul's right there. I'll pull him over. And the friend pulls him over and goes, Paul, I want you to meet Dave. Dave, I want you to meet Paul. And I go, and I, you know, the onus is on me. I'm the one like bugging him. The onus is on me to say something interesting or be interesting at all. Normally, Brad, I would like to think I'm a pretty good conversationalist. I could jump in with the best of them and go.
Yeah.
Brad, I look like I had never read a book. I look like I had never spoken the English language before. I look like I couldn't put two words together. And anyway, Paul, to his great credit, he gives it about 2 minutes and then he kind of leans forward, touches me on the arm and goes, well, I got to go. So we'll catch up later at the party, and like scoots off. And I'm like, man, I could not have blown that more. That was the worst.
Oh.
That was just the worst. And like to the point now where I'm joking with my wife that like we will at some point meet him again around Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping beyond hope that he'll never remember me. I'm just the guy that was fumfering at a party. And I can start fresh like, Paul, how lovely to meet you.
For the first time. For the first time ever.
Oh, poor Dave. If only you would have had a cup of hot cocoa to share.
Or some matching Christmas sweaters at the beach.
That would have been at least a good icebreaker. Like, do you want to have a sip of my cocoa? That's a good opening line.
That's a known Dale Carnegie conversation starter. It's like, always offer a cup of cocoa as you say their name 10 times, Brad Geiger.
I wondered, so last time I was in Los Angeles, I jumped into your car and you didn't see me, but I was rummaging through your glove compartment. You had a packet of Swiss Miss with the words Paul Rudd written on it. That must be your emergency cocoa. Is that what that is?
Yes, that is my... Can I tell you, the amount of setup, that was so delightful. The amount of setup for that joke. You weren't paying attention, but I was rummaging through your glove compartment. That is such a long walk for the Swiss Miss joke. I am here for it. That was great. Dave, I went through your closet and I noticed you had a matching set of Christmas sweaters, and I couldn't help but notice that one of them had the label inside that says "For Paul Rudd."
Oh God.
Well, I imagine though, Brad, that that never happens to you. You're probably a smooth talker when you meet people, right?
This is one of my favorite stories of all time. So. And you were around for it. This was the first year that Keen Spot went to San Diego Comic Con. This would have been 2001? 2001. So we're all out at Keen Spot. They've got a booth. They're rotating people through the chairs, right? And we have a panel. And I was selected to be one of the people on the panel for the panel. We had gone up there. We have a panel at Comic-Con International.
Oh, yeah. The first time you get a panel at Comic-Con just feels amazing.
We thought we had the world by the short hairs. And this was the first, and I think last time, that my wife accompanied me to Comic-Con because she wanted to see it. And after that, she never wanted to see it again. But she was at this panel. And after the panel, one of the very early Greystone Inn fans, who was kind of a younger kid, young 20s, right? He was in his young 20s. He comes up to me and he says, "Are you Brad Geiger?" I and he's spitting and he's spottling and he can't make a sentence. And I just very calmly, you know, grab him by the shoulder and I say, "Yes, I am. And thank you so much. You really that's so special. I appreciate that." And he asked for my autograph and I signed a book for him and we posed for a picture and it was wonderful. We walk away. My wife says, laughing, "Oh my God, you've got a fanboy." Right? And we're like, whoever would have thought that I would have had a fanboy, but this guy was so overwhelmed to meet me that he couldn't get a sentence out. And it was delightful. He was a wonderful, really nice guy. 3 minutes later, we're walking back and I realize that John Buscema is on the show floor just a few steps away. And I'm like, he's the author. He's the artist of the How to Make Webcomics book. I love he's one of my top three all time Marvel Comics artists.
Not how to make webcomics.
How to draw comics the Marvel way. How to draw comics the Marvel way.
You're still flustered years later. That's what's happening.
Yes. So I come around the corner and here he is, one of the triumvirate artists in my lifetime. And I come around and I go, "Are you John Buscema?" I'm spitting and spottling and I'm getting making wet all over the table. And he grabs me by the shoulder and he says, "Yes, thank you so much. That's very special." And he signed my copy of How to Make Comics the Marvel way.
So, Brad, I'm driving around Los Angeles yesterday, and, you know, L.A. is a ridiculously overheated real estate market. It's like, you know, one-bedroom horse trough with extra hay, $4 million, that kind of thing. So what happens in that kind of a weird real estate market is you get a lot of signs popping up on telephone poles and light poles and stuff. And so I got to tell you about this one sign yesterday that I saw, because I was like, kind of undercutting the message here. So it's like, "Make tens of thousands. I need an assistant to train to flip houses with me. Amazing work." All right. And you're like, that's a legit promo for something.
Sure.
But then, Brad, it's written in Sharpie on high school poster board and taped to a telephone pole. And this is like the biggest undercutting of message I've ever seen. Like, "Make tens of thousands." Meanwhile, I bought this $1 Sharpie and $1.50 poster board.
Make tens of thousands by not spending any money on office supplies.
Look, you too can be a millionaire by stealing staples from the office. And that's it for 2019, my friends. Thank you for checking out the Clip Show, and thank you more importantly for listening all through the year. Brad and I get your messages, your emails, your texts, and your Patreon notes, and we appreciate that feedback so much, and your listenership so much. And specifically, we want to say thank you to everyone who has taken the time, the money, and the effort to back and support the show over at patreon.com/comiclab. You know you get the show in advance. You know they get the 35 hours of exclusive podcasts that we've done for backers called Pro Tips. You can submit questions to the show. There's all sorts of forums and discussions of fellow pros and pro-ams that you could talk with. And we appreciate all that involvement throughout the year and in the years to come. So thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting. And we'll see you in 2019.
Wait a minute, you doofus. We'll see you in 2020. Well, we got our first clip for next year.
Cut to me dropping dead immediately. Well, there we go. I'll see you in 2019 because I'm gone. Bye, everybody.
Turns out hindsight really is 2019. Wow, we'll see you in 2019. I love how
I couldn't even get into the outro to say goodbye and have a wonderful year without messing it up. Well, we'll see you on next year's clip show, everybody.